where does the time go? Where does it go? Here we are. It's almost Christmas. It's crazy. So we've got a fantastic show for you today. You got another good one. This is going to be part two of our little sit down with Mr. Greg Gutfeld. We had him on last week. There was a lot of rock and roll talk, a lot of punk rock talk and stuff. Now we're dipping in a little bit into how he got involved with Fox News, and we can talk a lot about Red Eye. There's some inside scoop there. It's a great time. It's a great time. So we're gonna kick off this segment, the big opening segment. As always, welcome back the Liberty Gimlet from Nashville. You took a little weekend holiday to Nashville. How was that?
Yep, I had a blast.
Nice. It's a good town. That's a very, very good town.
Spent some time on Broadway, and then we spent some time in Printer's Alley, and then we went to the Opry and did that tour.
Oh, okay.
And also went to Andrew Jackson's house, and I remembered your thing from the History Channel.
Nice. How was Andrew Jackson's house?
Really interesting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, inside, like, a lot of this stuff is original from, like, wallpaper from 1818.
That stuff's crazy, yeah.
And it looks more like a painting, and they used to make it, and it came on numbered panels so that it would be hung in the right order so that it actually looks like it was intended.
Wow.
But I think the most touching thing to me, like, and this is weird, I know, was Uncle Alfred's grave.
Who?
Uncle Alfred. He was.
I like how you think I would know that.
Well, but you knew so much about Andrew Jackson in that video. I thought
good
maybe
point.
You would.
Good point. All right. So who's Alfred Uncle Alfred?
Alfred was a slave on the plantation, and after being emancipated, decided to stay on.
Yeah.
And he lived to be like 98 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so when they turned the house into a museum, he was the first tour guide. And he actually turned it into quite a thing for himself, because he sold pictures of himself and autographed them, a whole bunch of other stuff.
That's so cool.
And so Andrew Jackson and his wife are buried in a Greek Revival memorial kind of thing. Looks almost like something you'd see in D.C. I mean, it's interesting because he started that. I didn't realize he was the one that put the portico on the White House, that Greek Revival style. And when you stand back, the front of his house looks very similar.
Wow. See, I didn't know that either. I'm learning all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. And so when he passed away, Alfred is buried just beside General Jackson and his wife in his own little section. And it just says, Uncle Alfred, faithful servant for the general.
Wow.
And then like one of his granddaughters lived to be almost 101. She's buried there. It's like a little family plot.
Wow. He's an interesting dude. He's an interesting dude. And I love that kind of stuff. I love it. Like, when I went to Graceland, years ago, I was playing this comedy club in Memphis, Tennessee, and everybody's like, "Oh, you got to go to Graceland. You got to go to Graceland. It's so tacky. It's so tacky. It's so hillbilly, you know, blah blah blah." So I went to Graceland, and I'm like, "Okay, so I'm a multimillionaire. I'm 18 years old, and the year is 1970. This is exactly what I would do. Like, there was nothing tacky about it. I'm like, this is completely badass." So. But the creepy thing was, well, not creepy, but at the time, I can't remember what year this was, but many, many moons ago, but Elvis's his aunt was still alive, and you could hear her walking around upstairs, and it was like, ugh. That was just kind of, that has to be kind of creepy for the person left behind when you hear the tour groups going on downstairs. But very cool. Very cool. Andrew Jackson's house. Uncle Arthur. Fantastic. What, any good music? Any new like little indie country bands that you discovered that you're like, I had to buy their CD?
Oh, not really. Most of the ones we were in were playing covers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, not really too. We almost went to a show at the Opry, but decided against it.
And this is the one downtown. This is the original, right?
No, it's the new one.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's the new one, but what they did is they took a piece of the floor from the Ryman.
Yeah,
and it's a circle on the current Opry stage.
Yeah, I'd want to see the Ryman. I mean, I'm sure the new Opry's kind of cool, and I'm sure it's awesome and everything. But there's just something special about those old joints. So I'm glad you had a great trip in Nashville. Oh, and I want to make sure we give a shout out to this place. You said you had one. You had like a Nashville hot chicken sandwich.
Oh my God,
it was amazing! Where from?
Nashville hot. It's called Red 615. It was named. I guess he has a food truck, and it was named the best food truck in the state of Tennessee by the Food Network.
Dang!
And now he has like a. It's not like a walk-in sit-down restaurant. He has like a permanent. Like walk up counter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he actually sells the spice that he uses. And it was so interesting because it was so freaking hot. His coleslaw was great.
Ooh.
But it had a like little sweet finish to it. Really spicy, but a little bit of sweet.
I love that stuff. I saw a recipe. This dude almost put it on the website. If you want a great cheeseburger, there's a great recipe on the site. This dude that I discovered on YouTube, it's almost like a smash burger. You can make it at home. You can make it yourself. It's a very simple recipe. Same dude. No, it was a different guy. Had a recipe for a Nashville hot sandwich. And if you... I got no problem doing the prep work, you know. Mm-hmm. This guy, what he does is he soaks the chicken breast. We will get to politics, I swear to God. I swear. And entertainment and stuff. But I'm just, my mouth is watering just thinking about the sandwich. What this dude did is he took the chicken breast and he soaked them for a couple of hours in pickle juice.
You know, I hear that's what Chick-fil-A does too.
Chick-fil-A does something very similar. I don't think it's pickle juice, but I don't want to give away their secret, but I met a dude from Chick-fil-A years ago. And I feel like I'm betraying them if I spill the beans, but this dude, but this guy, like I'm watching the recipe and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to make the sandwich. But like, he goes out and he gets like this industrial size container of just like pure pickle juice. I'm like, I don't know where I could pick that up. I can't slide down the road to Kroger's and go give me a gallon of pickle juice. I got to eat like a case of pickles to get a gallon of pickle juice. But
right?
it looked incredible. And it fried up so crispy. And oh my goodness. Okay.
This one had a terrific crunch too.
Yeah. I love it. And when you can get that, we can get that crunch. And then the chicken is still moist.
Juicy.
And yeah, mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with the burger recipe, the smash burger recipe on the site. Yeah, you get a little bit of crunch on the edges, but on the inside, it's just cooked perfectly. Okay, that's all well and good. We're not going to do a whole, we should maybe one episode just do a cooking show. So Gutfeld is going to be on, it's part two of that. We've got to get into, and I don't want to, I'm thinking about how to attack this. I'm going to talk about The Mandalorian as much as I can without spoilers, because I know you haven't seen it yet, Gimlet. So there will be Mandalorian talk. We're going to do it in the body of the show. There'll be other stuff for the Patreon peeps later. We got to keep going on this election fraud and this Dominion software. There's so much craziness coming out that I don't think anyone has heard. I don't think most people have heard these insane allegations. I got to get to the tweet right now. First of all, I want to say this. Let's just talk about this. This one's breaking right now. Right before I got an email about this one. When you add up the total numbers of voters this year, they're saying now the numbers don't work. They're saying there was a 66% turnout this year, and between Donald Trump and third parties, there was 78 million votes. And then if you add in the amount of votes they're claiming for Joe Biden, you're off by about 16 million votes. The actual vote totals are way the F off. Now, maybe that's an accounting error. Maybe they got to go back and look at it again. But this email just came blasting through to me about this. And what they'll probably do is just adjust the number of voter turnout. But I thought that was very odd. Next, we have to turn our heads to the Dominion software thing and the whole. We were talking about this about Antrim County in Michigan and how the audit, and I guess there was things there were things redacted from that report, which now people are, I guess, unredacting. Oh my goodness. But it looks like it was flipped. It was flipped. It was flipped. Yes. Here we go. The redacted information in the Dominion audit reports shows that races were flipped. This is from the forensic audit of the Dominion voting systems in Michigan. And Michigan wanted to redact how the outcomes of races were changed. It's looking like there's more to this Dominion thing than we first thought. I know Trump had Sidney Powell come into his office, and Mike Flynn came into his office, I think on Friday, and they had some big kind of meeting. Now, of course, the media is trying to scare the bejesus out of everybody, going, he's talking about martial law. And if Trump has come out and said, yeah, I'm not doing martial law, yada, yada, yada. But either way you slice it, here's how I try to look at it, you guys. Seriously, no comedy here. It just can't be this shady. And this is what I say, you know, publicly. I say it on Facebook. I say it on Twitter. I'm saying it here. Like, if Joe Biden got 80 million votes and it's all legit, then there you go. Them's the apples. But if this software was flipping races and there was a 68% error rate in Antrim County, Michigan, that bears looking into. I think left, right, or center, you'd want to look into that. And then, oh my gosh, another shocking behind the scenes video comes out. They're auditing the vote down in Georgia, and this older couple just has this crazy huge stack of, like, that's the same. These all have the same signature. They all have the same signature. And you're like, what is going on? So I guess, and this is what drives me crazy about it, I guess they're talking about doing another audit. You probably know, you're a Georgia girl. Another audit down in Georgia to look into some of these irregularities. And they're doing one in Arizona. And yeah, they're irregular, but it won't affect the 2020 election. They're just going to blow by it. They're going to go, okay, yeah, that was kind of goofy, but we're not going to get to it. We're not going to get to it till after Biden is sworn in. And that's what drives me absolutely bonkers. What do you hear?
Oh, yeah. What do I hear? I haven't heard a lot in the last couple days because I've been out having fun. So I'm not aware of another audit in Georgia, but that doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah. Well, what about this DNI report? There's this new DNI report coming out about China's interference into the election. And they're like, yeah, it's not ready quite yet. We're not going to be able to do that till later on. And it won't affect. It's like this. one thing has come out of this the last few years, just this whole deep state, for lack of a better word. It's these career bureaucrats who are just going to drag their feet, and it's like they don't want their fellow career bureaucrat to ever get in trouble. So they're always gonna slow roll things. They're always gonna make sure it doesn't come out. And then when the media helps them out, you know, by not reporting it, not making a big deal out of it, and it's like this lie of omission. It just drives me so bonkers, man.
Well, you know, I got so frustrated, not this weekend, but the weekend before, that I had to like actually make a decision.
Yeah.
Not to be angry anymore.
Right.
Like,
That's a good one.
It takes a lot out of you. It really does.
Go ahead.
Put myself into something positive and optimistic, and I have a really hard time fully explaining the number of things that I view differently now as a result of President Trump's policies that are like rather shocking to me.
Explain that one.
Well, I mean, I'd heard Tucker Carlson say it and a few other people say it, and I think our friend Ryan Gerdusky has said it, and like, you have to get over this whole free market, free trade, you know, as religion thing. And now I look at it as, yes, we should have free and fair trade with our allies, but not with our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of a sudden, I just remembered, like, yeah, we didn't really do a lot with Russia during the Cold War. And you can't tell me we're not in a Cold War now.
That's exactly what they'll tell you. That's exactly what they'll tell you. And that's where, here's the thing, and I'll just say this, and it's like, maybe there's a comedy bit here. Maybe there's a stand-up bit. Here's the great thing about being a Democrat, right? When you get pissed off, you can just break shit. You can just burn stuff down. It's like,
yeah. That's true.
We can't riot. We can't riot. Because if you get a bunch of conservatives out on the street and we're like, here we go. Here we go, fellas. And then you go by somebody, you're like, oh, no, that's somebody's business, man. They worked hard on that. Don't burn that down. No, leave it. All right, let's go down the street. Oh, no. Somebody works there. We can't do it. There's like no outlet for the rage. I got this feeling in my bones that like something is just about to snap. You can't keep this kind of tension going without somebody snapping. I just don't know where it's going to be released.
I mean, there was that big march down in DC.
Yeah, that was nice.
But you literally had four Trump supporters get stabbed, and all the media said is four people were stabbed, like it was the Trump supporters that were stabbing people.
Yeah, that it was the Proud Boys. It was the Proud Boys. It was the Boogaloo Gang or whatever the hell they call them.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, I listened to Elijah Schaefer, who was there covering it and saw it.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, those were Antifa stabbing people.
That's the thing. Like, that's the other thing. I'm jealous. I'll just be honest. I'm jealous. Like with Antifa, you get the destruction. You get to do the fires. You get to build forts and say you got your own country. You get to do stuff, right? They have outlets. Like, oh, I'm gonna go get a new black hoodie and a new backpack, and I'm gonna get a new bike lock and whack people upside the head, and I'm gonna make it's like. They get to burn stuff down. They get that outlet. Mm-hmm. That's what I need. I need like an animal, just raw, just passionate, just an outlet. I need an outlet. I have to think other people are the same way. I can't imagine you're a business owner and you know you're trying to open up and some douche with a frickin' man bun comes in and starts writing you up and says you owe the government $10,000 because you're not supposed to be open. And meanwhile, you don't know what you're going to do. You just don't know what you're going to do to save your business. You don't want to lose everything. Like, what do those people do? What do they do? It's great. We can have marches and crap like that. But I guess we just have to hold on to this anger for another round of elections and hope that the GOP puts up a real fighter. They put up a real fighter, someone who's not going to knuckle under. Just got to hope for the best. Be patient. The storm is coming. It's so frustrating.
No, it is.
And it's got to, and it's like when you're not just one of these total goofballs that sits back and complains. I want to say this out loud before we go into the Greg Gutfeld show. It's a lot. We got to talk about COVID. We're gonna talk about COVID and lockdowns and all this other stuff. But I watched CBS Sunday Morning, and Jim Gaffigan did his little segment. I guess it was his week. And he's just like, it's hard to wait. It's waiting's tough. We did a lot of waiting in 2020. We waited for this. We waited for the election. We waited for the lockdown to end. We waited for healing of America. And I just wanted to throw my couch like the Hulk.
Through your TV.
Oh my God. You see, it's one thing, like if you're doing really well, and you would have think these people would have learned this by now. If you're doing well, if you think the perception of the rest of the world is, they're okay, don't even complain. Don't even come close to complaining. You're not allowed to be sad. You're not allowed to be like, we had to wait a lot. Dude, I guarantee you didn't apply for unemployment. I guarantee you're not going out to the mailbox every day wishing and a-hoping. I guarantee you're not losing sleep because you don't know how you're going to pay the bills. We did a lot of waiting. Oh, man. It was the worst.
Well, that was like that Pete Davidson sketch.
I didn't see that one.
Apparently, he was like mocking hard the business owners that are trying to open their businesses in New York, and was a real jerk about it. And I'm just sitting there going, dude, have you missed a paycheck?
For real. For real.
Who are you?
And Saturday Night Live did it again this last Saturday. They had Kristen Wiig on and a couple of other, and they came out and they sang this big opening number. And it's like, oh, so you're allowed to sing, but you can't go to church and sing. So that's how it is. Oh, and you can perform in front of a live studio audience, and you can still get paid. And oh, it's just holly jolly. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. I try to stay optimistic. I try to make fun of this stuff, but. I just can't imagine anybody not opening their business. Just open your business. Screw these dickwads.
We're in Nashville, and we did have a good time, but apparently you can only catch COVID after 10 o'clock at night.
You were there for the taping of my special. You saw me do that bit.
Yeah. Apparently you can only catch COVID between the front door until your ass hits a chair.
Yeah. COVID is about 6 feet high, but once you sit down to eat, you're fine.
Yeah. I'm this is just ridiculous.
Yeah. There's going to be more ridiculousness coming up. Holy crap. There's a ton. After Gutfeld, Biden, Hunter, Joe's niece, and then some Eddie Izzard stuff, some winter solstice stuff, some Mandalorian stuff, and some COVID vaccine stuff. So stick around. We'll be right back with Mr. Greg Gutfeld.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 5,000 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 5,000. Enjoy!
The best thing is when I used to go to LA before COVID, and I would go to a restaurant. Generally, if people don't like Fox, they don't even know who I am. But when you see somebody that knows who you are, it's because they're a fan. So like, I'll walk into some place and there'll be a famous person there, and they just stare at me and their eyes are open, and I go, that's a fan. Because if he didn't like me, it would be a different response. But it's like, and I won't say, but like, they'll like look at me and I go, ha ha, I see you. And they point at me and they go, yes. And they go, yeah, I knew it. I'm not going to see somebody like Joe Pesci, maybe, or anyway.
Well, this is a great little segue, because you grew up in California, you know, yada yada yada. That's all great, and you made your. How did Red Eye happen? I've always wondered this. Like, how did that show come about? And I'm gonna blow a little smoke right before I'm gonna let you answer, because here's what Red Eye did for me, and I was on. Red Eye back in the early days.
Yeah, I think like the first month.
I think so. Yeah, it was like I was from the satellite in LA because I'm like, this is it. This is it. This guy gets it. It's a show, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I loved about it is like it's just people hanging out who see the world kind of the same way. They're not being douchebags. They're having a good time. They're laughing, and I'm like, that is it. Some college kid can stumble across that show and go, oh, these guys are laughing. They're having a good time, yada, yada, yada. They just happen to be, you know, lean to the right politically. So so how did that show happen?
Yeah, let me just put out to your point about the laughing thing. I do believe that when you come across something like Red Eye or The Five or the Gigi Show, it's instant dislike, repulsion, confusion, and then adherence. Because at first when you hear the laughter, you think, I'm not laughing along with them until you are. If you're not laughing along with them, you hate them. And then all of a sudden something starts changing. And that was like Red Eye. If you didn't know any better, you thought you could mistake it for a morning zoo, like a really kind of like, Bill, what happened today? Because like, if you don't know that we're actually fake morning zoo and we're actually just like decrepit people crapping on each other, you might mistake, like there are people, I still get like emails from people that saying that, I remember when I listened to Red Eye, I hated it. And then I realized that I totally misread it, because they thought that we were like a morning zoo, like Z100, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like Andy, Bill, and Greg. But it's actually, we were the opposite. We were like self-loathing mockeries. We were Fernwood Tonight. I always say that Red Eye was Fernwood Tonight, but not as good. But okay, so how it started, I'll give you the elevator summary because it takes too long. I was invited to work on the Huffington Post before it launched.
Right.
And I started writing for them. And I was already editor-in-chief of Maxim in the UK. But it was writing for the Huffington Post that got me on the radar of television, because who was this guy mocking Arianna Huffington and everybody on her own website? And of course, as you know, Andrew Breitbart was running the website, and my name kind of blew up online. Everybody was like on Gawker, all these things were talking about who's this weirdo on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
So I'm writing these bizarre screeds, but I'm living in London, and then I get a Breitbart goes, hey, Gutfeld, you know, there's a guy that lives out there. They want to talk to you about something. And I said, sure. So I meet this guy at a bar in Chelsea, and he's, which happens a lot. And I go, and he starts telling me, he starts like, they were basically kind of flirting, but not sure. They wanted to do a show. And to your point, it was, I think the way John Moody described it was like, what a drunk person puts together from their fridge at 3 a.m. Like the ketchup, some fucking, you don't have enough bread. You right? Like, you make, you use the ends loaf, the ends of the loaf.
Put
and
some
mayonnaise.
Ketchup in there.
Yeah. Peanut butter. So that's how they described it. But so, so then they flew me over and I met Ailes, and it was like an instant click because I was just like, I had done Fox and I was a concern. And I go like, I know what I want to do. I'm a packager. I edited 3 different magazines, Men's Health and stuff. And Max, I know how to package things. That I'm a more of a producer than a writer. And so I could see this thing. The funny thing is I wrote up a whole structure for the show. And the moment we went in to do the rehearsals, they didn't even look at the stuff that I offered. It always comes down to 5 segments. One's an opener, and each block is about a topic. So it's like I had all these pockets that I normally do in magazines, like little segments, like, did you know that? Or just like us, you know, things that you see in magazines. Like, no. But the funny thing is, those things work as like animals are great.
Yeah.
Or Dana came up with one more thing. Or they're like little, if you create little packages, people get excited about them. So on Red Eye, we made a lot of weird little things. Me with the unicorns and the weird stuff with my mom calling in. And, the one thing that was great that like, you know, they didn't want to do, but I knew that they weren't going to give Andy Levy a job. And so the ombudsman thing, the halftime report, was my way of making sure. And also I thought that he was a sleeper. They just didn't understand him because he had such a halting way of speaking.
Just crushed me like every time. There's so many. I'm like, I'd be sitting in my my house watching it. I'm like, I hope everybody got that. I really hope everybody
got that. He did stuff that was over my head. And the thing is, it's like there was a guy who wrote, I think for the New Yorker, wrote our like kind of like our obituary, and it's a great piece on Red Eye when it folded. And he described him as the olive in the dry. He's like the driest olive in a dry martini. He's like, it's just like it's a dry as sand. And he did a great job. And then you had Bill, who was like this, you know, I remember walking outside back when I used to smoke, and there's Jackie Mason is walking down. He goes, hey, how's that broken down fella? The little broken down fella. And I go, Bill Schultz. He goes, yeah, how's he doing? And it's like everybody knows the little broke. Like, it was like he had a persona that everybody, like, it's like when Jackie Mason comes up to you on the street and asks you about Bill Schultz. But he gets described as the broken down fella.
And it was hilarious.
That's a persona. That was a persona that Bill developed and me constantly insulting him, that worked out. So it was a very good relationship for the three of us to love hate. And it's one of those things that happens in bands, and it's hard to capture. I think on the 5, you saw that with me and Dana, and I think you see it now with me, Dana, and Jesse. There's like this weird connection that works, and it's harder to do with a weekly because you only see each other once a week.
Yeah.
So like, if the GG show, let's say the GG show's on every night, you would probably see a more bizarre, not bizarre, but a more intense back and forth with me and Tyrus or me and Kat, because you see each other every day. That's how chemistry is built. So that's it takes, I mean, I don't know how many, 5 years now. So it's like probably 50 shows a year, 250 shows. You do that in 1 year on a weekly.
Yeah. Yeah. No? Well, I tell you, I mean,
not a daily. Yeah.
Perino, and I call her Perino because she's not here, but Dana, I don't know if you know this. So they brought me into Fox, and they're like, cause, and it was very cool. Cause they're like, we know you're doing stand up and we know you're writing on these shows. And would you even want to risk it and be more visible on Fox? I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the cat's out of the bag, blah, 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 blah. They go, well, Greg has some vacation time coming up. So
you're my fill in, Michael. How does that make you feel?
Dude, so check this out. I loved it. So I show up. I'm in the green room at like 3:30 to get into to makeup because I'm pretty sure the show tapes at 4, and then they air it at 5. And so everybody's like, "You're so early. You're so early." And then, I perform. I do stand up. I haven't done a lot of live TV. Dana was so cool. She was just like, "Hey, don't worry. I'm not gonna let you make an ass out of yourself. It'll all be okay."
You know what's funny? It's like, that's very helpful. Because we do that thing every day, it's like you. It's like whatever you do every day, you don't realize that it's something new for somebody else. And sometimes you will see it when somebody's on and shit falls apart. And it's like, you go like, oh my God, it's like you need to help this person. But they didn't even expect it to happen. They didn't expect in the middle of the set, like the one of the things that happens, and this has happened to me when I did Hannity and Combs when I was living in London, and this might have been 2004, and I did, so it's like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m, and I was doing Hannity and Combs, and I lost my train of thought in a sentence. And when you're a guest on a show and that happens, there's almost no way to get it back. You start, and what happens is you get into the catastrophic thinking. It's kind of, you must know this. I don't do stand-up. I've never done stand-up. But in stand-up, when you feel that you are bombing or something's happening, you could spiral. And that's what I've done that on shows. And when I see it happening to people, you can actually see their face. I remember Combs saved me, during that, cause he saw something happening and he just dove right in and like, so nobody noticed it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that horrible feeling when you're on stage and you do a joke and you know it's a home run. You know it's a home – you just told the long ball joke and it's a little dribbler to first. And you're like, wow, my home run just barely got me on – and then you start thinking and it's when you start thinking. It can go bad fast. Okay. I don't want to let you go ever, but without talking about – your new book, The Plus.
You don't have to talk about it.
Listen,
did you read it?
I did not read it. I know the guy who wrote it has a show I'm on from time to time. But we're not like.
You don't have to plug it. You don't, because like it's like the. You know what's the great thing about The Plus is that was not part of my book contract. It was an idea that I had in the middle of the night. So it's like, if I make any money off it, that's great. But I made it clear. I go, I'm not interested in this being like, oh, we got to. But then it did great because of that. It taught me a lesson that if you don't care about something being successful as much as it. And so and that ends up just flying into the self-help bestseller list. And it was also really a breeze to write. And people really liked it because what I tried to do was I could – a miserable misanthrope write a self-help book, and what would that be like? That was the experiment for me. It was like, I want to be a better person, and it happened right before COVID, and it's like, okay, it's like what your producer said about Batman becoming Batman, like learning skills to become better, and that's what, and so it ended up becoming a success just organically. I hate saying that because that's so fake. By the way, did you notice that Dana has a new book out now?
I did not. What's her new book?
It's hilarious. You got to look at the cover. It's great. It's called Everything's Going to Be Okay. It's like perfect, but it's a self-help book. It's a self. She looked at what I did, the little idea thief. She looked, oh, Greg did a self-help book. I'm going to do a self-help book. But you got to look at it. I think it's called Everything's Going to Be Fine. Wait a minute. Yeah. Let me just look it up.
Is the dog on the cover? Is there dog on the cover?
No.
Really?
But let me see if I can find the thing real quick. It's called, let me just do Dana Perino I love this that I'm on Skype and you can't see me, because then I can do shit that you can't see.
Yeah. Well, here's,
I like when you Google Dana Perino, you get Dana Perino husband, Dana Perino age, Dana Perino salary, Dana Perino net worth. Let's write book. Isn't that great when you stuff it? It's called Everything Will Be Okay, and Life Lessons for Young Women from a Former Young Woman.
Half the audience is gone.
We made fun of that, but you know it's going to – who buys self-help books, right? She's going to go to number one. And she just did this. She did this to get back at me for doing a self-help book. She's like going, if Greg can be positive, that's my turf.
To the success of the book, and like it's always wonderful when you're just putting out content and you're not squeezing. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying too hard. You're not pushing too hard.
I have not squeezed. Like sometimes in some segments on the five, I'll have to squeeze. Like if we're doing something on sequestration. But you know what's interesting is if you don't squeeze and just see what your brain does. I've learned a lot, believe it or not. I can't believe I'm saying this. I learned a lot from Jesse Waters. Jesse Waters flies by the seat of his pants. I said it to Jesse. I could not stand him. Like when he used to do the Waters World stuff.
Yeah.
I thought he was so cheesy. And actually, no, I did. His collar up. But he's a star. Like he's a star in the making, I really feel like he knows what there's something, you know what he is? He's Fred Willard. He knows what he is. Like when Fred Willard would be himself on Fernwood Tonight or Best in Show, where Jesse can actually walk into his own persona and flap it around. And I think that's a really rare gift to know what you are. And poke fun of it at the same time is incredible.
Yeah.
That's my only nice thing I'm going to say about him. By the way, he's never going to hear this podcast.
Well, they will. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to download this and I'm going to send it to Jesse.
Yeah.
To make sure he listens. Here's how we're going to leave off. We're going to circle back around to guitars before we stick the dismount. One of the guys, I did this Freedom to Laugh tour. It was myself, my buddy Reno Collier, and my good friend Brian Hayner. Brian Hayner's a big time studio musician, guitarist, and I reached out to him for help. His son started the band Avenged Sevenfold, and Brian's what?
I know the band Avenged Sevenfold. I know.
Yeah. But he's got a school. It's the Sinister Gates School, SYNYSTER, Sinister Gates School. And he gave me some ticks. When you're doing like that metal stuff, that palm muting, there's some really cool stuff. It's all about your wrist. And
will you send me that?
I'll send you a link. I'll send you a link to the Sinister Gates School. I'm doing some blue stuff. Here's what I want to do. I want to learn to play whatever Keith Richards was learning and listening to when he was a kid. That's what I want to learn how to play.
Okay, but isn't that have a lot to do with the tuning, the drop D tuning?
Keith didn't do that till much later. Keith didn't do that open G stuff till much later. But this is great. This is awesome. Congrats on everything. Congrats on quarantine.
On guitar, because I refuse to believe that I can't do this.
You can do it. You can do it. And it's crazy. It's like,
dude, once I do it, I'm putting out an album.
Buddy?
I am.
Oh my God. This is hilarious. I reached out to my buddy a couple weeks ago. I'm like, we got to do an EP. I want to do, dude, I got some Bo Diddley stuff that I'm writing. He's doing crazy.
I was in a band called Phallic Death back in 87 or 86 at Berkeley. It's called Phallic Death. I was the lead singer, and it was rap metal. Think about how ahead of the time that was. And
yes.
We were in California, and I would sing like this. But that was around Slayer.
Yeah.
Good. But anyway, we can talk about that some other time.
Yeah, that's correct. There was a band when I was playing at the Ohio State University back in the 80s. There was this crazy group called the Royal Crescent Mob, and they were doing this rock, funk, rap fusion thing like way before the Chili Peppers were doing it. And you're just like, this is insane, and it's fun, and it's good. Okay, so congrats on everything. I want to follow up. I'll send you the links to the guitar stuff because it'll help. I'm still learning too. I'm still trying to put it all together. Congrats on the book, the five. Thanks for the behind the scenes peek into Red Eye. Tell Perino I said thanks.
I will.
And
I apologize for swearing.
Say what?
I apologize for swearing. I think I swore three times.
No, this is it. This is the place, guy. This is the place. Okay.
So I don't get in trouble then. Like, I don't get a call from Fox. We heard this podcast that you were on. they used to do that. I don't think they have the time for that anymore.
No, thanks. I don't think they have the time for this one.
All right, buddy.
You're a champ. Have a good one, bud.
Hope to see you soon.
Yeah,
GG show.
I think you just might. The Greg Gutfeld Show, everybody. Watch it every Saturday.
There's nothing more predictable in life than the unexpected. Lightning will always strike. Hail will fall on roofs. Fortunately, there's AAA. AAA has been helping members stay prepared for over 100 years. So when unusual storms, fallen debris, or sudden leaks happen, you'll be covered. Check, check, and check. Get the home and auto insurance you need by talking with a AAA insurance agent today. Visit AAA.com/insurance or stop by your local AAA store.
Ready to stand out? Army ROTC prepares you not only as a college student, but as a strong leader, allowing you to earn the rank of second lieutenant. You will be eligible for full tuition, merit-based scholarships, and develop leadership skills essential for your future. Start strong and enhance your college experience. Visit your campus Army ROTC representative today. To find out how you can earn up to a full tuition scholarship, visit goarmy.com/podcast to locate your closest ROTC program today. Army officers inspire strength in others. Paid for by the United States Army.
I like that dude. I like him. You know what it is about Gutfeld? There's no like middle gear. It's all like straight to fifth gear. He goes from 0 to 80. There's no middle ground. And
right?
Seriously, it's a good thing. I'm on hold to do his show this week. That would be. It's always a good time. Always a good time. And last time I was on, Tyrus was in a very good mood. You know what happened? I didn't even realize this. John Schneider, the dude from Dukes of Hazzard, did some kind of like wacky remake of that Burt Reynolds movie, Smokey and the Bandit. And Tyrus was in it and like plays the sheriff. Now I have to see it. Now I have to see it. Okay. So gonna be honest here about COVID thoughts, vaccine thoughts, and some breaking developments. And this is, it's a catch 22, you guys. It's a catch 22. There's something in my gut that's just telling me don't do it. That's just telling me don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Am I glad there's a vaccine out there? Sure, I guess. Rah, rah, team humanity. However, it seems so fast. Now, I know that was the whole point. Maybe I'm missing the whole point. But it's like, I don't.
If it was fast and like every other vaccine, okay?
Go
if
ahead.
If it was fast and it was an attenuated virus, a weakened form of the virus that triggers your immune system, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
It's like every other vaccine, but I don't get a flu vaccine either.
Me neither.
Because it's not that effective. And
right.
So, but like, should an older person who already has like maybe heart problems and stuff maybe think about a flu vaccine? Sure. But it's not like every other vaccine. And yeah. They're saying things about this vaccine that just don't make any sense. It makes no sense to say, well, we know it'll keep you from getting sick, but we're not sure if you can still transmit it. Explain that to me.
There's so much.
That's not even possible.
There's so much gray area. And it's like with everything. And I'm not a fan of, and I don't want to get too angry again, but just like how freaking murky everything is. Like, just to use it as an example, not to change the subject. But like with the election stuff, you have these people on Twitter, and you have these outlets going, this, oh my God, this happened. And then you'll have some other outlet go, that didn't happen. And here's why it didn't happen. And here's why. And it's just like, so what really is going on? I don't want to get all, ticked off. However, with the vaccine, it's like, well, it's a new kind of vaccine. It's a new kind of science. The word like RNA thrown around a lot. So it's a brand new style of vaccine, and we're sure about this, yeah. But you still have to wear a mask and you can't go outside. Why am I getting this?
Why am I getting this again? So it's
bring it, pull it together, woman, pull it together.
Okay. So like if I had an elderly relative,
yes,
that had pre-existing conditions, that was living in a nursing home or an assisted living place, I'd be like, yeah, you should probably do that.
Yeah.
Because what we don't know is the long-term effects. Am I going to sit there and be thrilled if one of my kids is made to take it by their employer? Absolutely not.
That's...
Especially since one of them has had COVID. There's no reason somebody who's had it needs a vaccination.
Amen to that, sister. Amen to that.
Like, my whole thing is you keep saying these things about this virus, Dr. Fauci, that do not apply to any other virus in the world. So you're making some extraordinary claims here. You need an extraordinary story to back that up.
And I don't know. This is going to sound harsh as well. But the survivability rate of this thing, like, why are we even going so far down the road of a vaccine for this? Like, it seems like a huge overreaction.
Well, and then they're not even reporting what's going on in Europe right now.
It's like you read my mind.
Portugal has outlawed quarantining people based on a PCR test. They can't do it anymore.
Nice.
Because the test cycles are too high, and going to a PCR of 40%, according to one study by Jafar et al. That is published on the NIH's website, only 3% of tests at a cycle count of 35, 3% at 35 can actually grow in a culture. At 35, only 3% of tests can make photocopies of themselves. And we're going to 40.
Yeah, I don't.
At that point, it's like mostly noise.
And then here's the latest. And I don't know if you were up on this one. But Boris Johnson, our good friend over there in England, has, you know, here comes another strict lockdown, a ginormous lockdown, a lockdown of all lockdowns like you've never seen before, because they say there's a new strain, that there's a new strain of COVID-19. Maybe we're going to call this one COVID-20. COVID-21 has a better ring to it.
Viruses mutate. I'm not impressed. That's why you need a different flu vaccine every year.
Exactly. Which begs the question, and that's why I don't get the flu vaccine, because you never know which strain of flu is coming out. And it's like the odds of, it's like roulette. Like, why even, whatever. But like, so does the vaccine work on the new strain? Or is there a...
No clue.
Like, I don't want to rush pell-mell into this. And I've thought about it, and that I've got some things coming up, and I might have to make some really, really big decisions. But I just, this is taking us down a bad road. This is taking us down a bad road. The election, it's the same feeling about the election. It's like that. It just doesn't ring true. Maybe I'm in denial. Maybe I'm in some kind of huge denial. But my same feeling with the election I have with the vaccine. No, I'm not a doctor. No, I'm not a scientist. But something just don't seem right. Something don't seem right. And there doesn't seem to be an upside from getting it. Go ahead.
So I told you about Portugal. They actually said you can't quarantine people based on this test anymore.
Good.
The Italians have filed a lawsuit.
Against
the government for locking down their businesses and destroying them financially with a test that isn't even accurate. It's the same test we use. So then you've got a group of four lawyers in Germany that are suing the German government.
Exactly. And this is great. This is great because it's kind of it goes around everything. So what will eventually happen is people will be mad at China. Like, because these small businesses will sue their local government. Local will sue the state. State will sue the Fed. And then the Fed will go, well, it really wasn't our fault. We have to look to China. And I don't think at some point, some journalist will get curious. Some journalist will get curious. And then hopefully there's still enough people alive in China that worked at this Wuhan lab, the Wuhan, that'll get to some kind of truth. I just keep coming back to this FDR quote. You know, there's no accidents in politics. If it happened that way, it was planned that way. And I feel like a lab rat a lot of times. Like, ooh, how will they get super mad if we do this? Ooh, what if we do that? I feel like I'm being corralled, and I hate that feeling. I hate that feeling.
Yeah,
I'm sure the mouse does too, but the mouse can't do anything about it.
The New York Times in July of this year. Dr. Anthony Fauci said on a podcast, test above 35, it's virus that's not capable of replicating, basically. There's some general agreement around that number.
Yeah.
Then the New York Times gets the results from labs in three states and says, holy shit, only 10% of these are real.
Yeah.
Then you have a Swedish immunologist who worked with Fauci, Dr. Beta Stadler, come out and say, guys, they're just lying to you. He said, first of all, the PCR test, all these PCR tests that are positive and people are asymptomatic, you don't have asymptomatic disease. And then I start looking at all the FDA or all the CDC stuff, and they are smashing together asymptomatic and what is called prodromal spread, which is like when you're not feeling particularly well, maybe you're a little tired, but you don't have specific symptoms yet.
Yeah.
They did this whole metadata study that just came out. Only 18% of household contacts catch it with a COVID positive patient in their house. Only 38% of spouses who have the closest contact catch it from their spouse.
Something, it just doesn't add up.
But we're masking in a freaking grocery store?
Yeah, and we're locking everything down, and small businesses, you guys, sorry about that. You're not allowed to open your restaurant. And it just doesn't. It shouldn't be this mysterious. It shouldn't be this mysterious. But there should be some kind of truth. I just want to know what's really going on. Go ahead.
How do they just ignore Georgia and Florida?
Because
almost no restrictions.
And none. That is the other terrifying notion. Sorry, this one took a turn for the worst. But it's like the narrative. You can sense the narrative. Be afraid, be very afraid, trust the government, they know what's up, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. They don't talk about the numbers from a lot of states unless it fits what they're selling. And then I'm like, why are you selling me anything? And that's like...
C.S. Lewis, in the Atomic Age, it's perfect.
Go ahead, what's that?
It's a short little thing he wrote. And I will pull it up.
Yeah.
And because it's short, I can actually read it.
All right. While you're pulling that up.
Okay.
While you're pulling that up, we're going to get to some C.S. Lewis. We got to wrap things up. And I won't. This is a huge hiccup. If you want to read my review of The Mandalorian, it is up at theloftistparty.com. It's there. If you have not seen The Mandalorian, and you are in any way, shape, or form a Star Wars fan, you need to see it. If you wanted somebody to come in and help save the franchise, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. It is there. We'll go into it next week. We'll go into it next week in a greater detail. But let me just say, and like my review was just a big love letter to Jon Favreau and everyone involved in the show from top to bottom. Like I have like nitpicky things, but what Star Wars fan doesn't? However, it did what it needed to do. And there is a sweet payoff that just had me losing my mind. I was so happy. All right. Do you have the C.S. Lewis quote?
I do.
Okay.
Now, whenever I say atomic bomb, just think COVID.
Okay. Right? Yes.
Search in one way, we think a great deal too much of the atomic bomb. How are we to live in an atomic age? I am tempted to reply, why, as you would have lived in the 16th century when the plague visited London almost every year, or as you would have lived in a Viking age when raiders from a Scandinavian land might have cut your throat any night. Or indeed, as you are already living in an age of cancer, age of syphilis, an age of paralysis, an age of air raids, an age of railway accidents, and an age of motor accidents. In other words, do not let us begin by exaggerating the novelty of our situation. Believe me, dear sir or madam, you and all whom you love were already sentenced to death before the atomic bomb was invented. And quite a high percentage of us were going to die in unpleasant ways. We had indeed one very great advantage over our ancestors, anesthetics. But we have that still. It is perfectly ridiculous to go about whimpering and drawing long faces because the scientists have added one more chance of a painful and premature death to a world which already bristled with such chances and in which death itself was not a chance at all, but a certainty.
That dude was great.
Wasn't he, though?
That dude was great. Did you ever read, he gave a sermon, and Andrew Clavin from the Daily Wire turned me on to this, and it's just beautiful, where C.S. Lewis is, you know, he's like the guest speaker at this church, and talking about at the end of all things, it all boils down to, love. And being loved and that's what it's all about, is love. And like, just a brilliant dude. I like that. Yeah. What?
Yeah. There was one more paragraph to it.
I'm sure there was.
Just like the first action to be taken is to pull ourselves together. If we're all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb come when it finds us doing sensible human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing our children, playing tennis, chatting with our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep thinking about bombs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And wow, once again, it kind of pulls all together because I was so irritated with Jim Gaffigan. And we need to face up. We need to face up to some hard, cold truths. Fake news is the enemy of the people. Fake news is truly the enemy of the people. And we're being led down some kind of path, and I don't like it. And they're holding back facts, and they're holding back reality. And they covered for Hunter Biden, and they covered for the Biden family, and they tried to pull this guy across the finish line. They said they showed no intellectual curiosity into that. They did not want us to know the truth. And so anybody who's done it once will do it again, or they've already done it before. And I don't like not knowing where I stand with this, with the whole COVID-19, the vaccine. I don't like being part of some narrative. I don't like just, how do we sway this opinion and all this stuff? And here's the other cold, hard fact. I'm sorry, you guys. Here's a harsh one. We're a nation of pussies.
Yup.
We really are. This whole Jim Gaffigan, it's hard to wait. Like this whole, and I don't want to get too dirty here, but just like, I don't know how else to say it. I don't know how else to say it. Like, why are you allowing some little pencil pushing bureaucrat? Oh, we can't open our business. What are you going to do? Help is not on the way. Help is not on the way. There is no cavalry coming. You are the cavalry. You might want to grab a saddle and get on your horse. But it's time to go. Like,
how much further do you let them move the goalposts? First, we had to flatten the curve. 15 days to slow the spread.
Yeah.
We're on like day 273 now, guys. And they're telling us the vaccine isn't going to do it.
Right?
What the hell is going on? And how much more are you going to let them move the goalposts? Because I'm sitting here in the state of Georgia, and I have friends down in Florida. We're open. We're living. We're not falling over dead in the streets. And Joe Biden is going to get into office and make us freaking pay. He's going to somehow take federal dollars away from us or do something to try to force our governors to close.
And
they better not do it.
And they better hope that their pussification of America works and that people still take it. Like, they have shown themselves.
We have a 4% unemployment rate right now. Georgians aren't going to not go to work. We've been going to work.
But like, look at the epic fail by the federal government. Look at the epic fail. They couldn't figure out a way. And they've been looking at this problem and they've been studying it and since March. Uh-oh. We told everybody they're not allowed to work. Nobody can work. Uh-oh, what are we going to do? And so they did their big ginormous stimulus package, and that was just a shotgun blast of money, and it went God knows where, and good people got it, and bad people got it, and small, it just went everywhere. So they couldn't fine-tune a package that just went to the people who pay taxes. Okay, you live in America, you pay taxes, you're not allowed to work, here's money. They couldn't figure that out. Nancy Pelosi wouldn't allow it to happen. Money's got to go. It's just very, it's very frustrating. We need more people. Imagine this. Like, we need more people to get involved. This podcast, the Facebook page, the YouTube channel. Job one, let's get more people. So that when we hold events, there's a boatload of us there. When we make phone calls, there's a boatload of people calling. We just need more people. And then we'll keep going. We'll keep starting. This is a great conversation. We're going to continue this. We're going to continue this on the Patreon page. We'd love it if you joined us over there. We got some more Hunter Biden stuff coming up. We got some Space Force. We got Joe Biden's niece getting the Dewey. All right, so you're awesome. Thanks for being here. Let your friends know about the podcast. Be our friend on Facebook. Subscribe on the YouTubes. We're on Rumble. We're on Parler. We're on Clout. We're everywhere.